At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Russia, Afghanistan, two of the great mysteries of 2021 unsolved. I go to Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, who has traveled widely over the years in both instances, in the Hindu Kush, especially Pakistan, but also Afghanistan. And then we go to Russia, where Anatole spent some weeks this in 2021. However, the breaking news out of Russia isn't reflecting on the culture. It's comments by the president of Russia within these hours in a very large press conference held in Moscow. Mr. Putin told everyone, but especially the journalists, further movement of NATO eastward is unacceptable. Are we placing missiles near the borders of the United States? No. It is the United States with its missiles that came to our doorstep. They are on the threshold of our house. Is it an excessive demand? No more attack weapon systems near our home? Is there something unusual about this? I'll end there and turn to Anatole. Clever, very forward, rhetorical questions that have one direction to remind me this is the Cuban Missile Crisis reversed. The Kremlin is using the same case that the Kennedy administration used in 1962 before the world to launch the blockade that led to that crisis in October and then resolution. Mr. Putin has gathered troops at the Ukraine border. Mr. Putin has for weeks made remarks about something must be done. There is now promised a negotiation with Mr. Lavrov and NATO in January. At this measure, how do you see Europe dealing with this crisis? I want to leave the U.S. and Moscow out of it for a moment and reflect upon our European allies. Good day to you, Anatole.
Hello, John. Well, you're quite right. I mean, this has been a very clever move by Putin and the Russian government, because, as you say, it recalls the Cuban Missile Crisis. It claims that America is simply behaving in the same way as the United States. But I think above all, it draws the attention of Europeans to the possibility of war and even nuclear war on their continent. Since the Europeans have, most of them, and not all, of course, have always been much, much more worried about conflict with Russia than much of the American establishment, this, you know, will clearly, or at least is intended to, stir up European anxieties and, you know, create a desire, not perhaps so much in European governments, but in European publics, about the need to avoid war. Of course, the other thing about Europe is, and especially Germany, of course, the biggest economy, the most powerful country in Europe, it's both much closer to Russia, but also, of course, it has much closer economic ties to Russia than the United States, both because of investments and trade, but of course, above all, because of dependence on Russian gas. The Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi gave a very candid speech yesterday in which he said, look, let's face facts. We're not going to fight to defend Ukraine, and we can't do without Russian gas. So, you know, let's get real about this.
In getting real about this, Russia has ambitions, and some of those ambitions sometimes include regaining, recapturing, repositioning some fashion of return to the past about what was the Russian Empire and is now the Soviet Empire. I note one of the demands made by the Kremlin, and that word was used in English after the release from the Kremlin. One of the demands was to roll back the military infrastructure in NATO nations since 1997. That very carefully describes what were the nations under the Warsaw Pact and under the Soviet control for much of the 20th century. Is that a realistic demand from the point of view of Western Europe, that these Eastern European countries no longer enjoy our protection, and it's every country for him or herself?
Well, the problem is that even after the United States and NATO committed itself to expand in the 1990s, there was an explicit formal promise to the Russian government that NATO troops would not be stationed, American troops would not be stationed in the new members of NATO. Now, that too has subsequently been forgotten, but the promise was made to Russia. And so Putin is really just trying to hold us to that. But I think, I mean, in a way, this is a non-issue, except because these countries will still be part of NATO. Therefore, they will still be covered by NATO's Article 5 guarantee. The problem is that America does not have the troops in Europe at the moment, and Europe does not have either the organized and equipped troops or the will necessarily to use them to defend these countries. So, in order actually to be able to defend these countries, you need the European allies of NATO to take their own defense and their own alliance commitments much, much more seriously. This is something that none of them are doing. And of course, the Germans have been particularly bad in this regard. You have a new German foreign minister from the Greens, who has called for NATO expansion and confronting Russia, but has also consistently opposed higher German military spending. Well, one can understand both why Russia does not take this very seriously, but also why a lot of Americans quite rightly get very, very exasperated with this European attitude. So I think, in real terms, there is room for compromise here with Russia when it comes to the stationing of forces, as long, of course, as it is made entirely, totally clear that existing members of NATO, Poland, the Baltic states, are indeed still covered by the Article 5 guarantee, which, of course, does not apply to Ukraine because Ukraine is not a member of NATO. But, if the United States and NATO do not defend their Article 5 guarantees, then NATO is obviously finished as an organization. So that is the important point to keep making.
I rush to the rhetorical ramparts just here at the moment of the end of the year. Mr. Chamberlain's always turning up in America. Is he turning up in London all the time, too? I know he seems to be everywhere these days. And that following that, we have the word appeasement. It would appear that any compromise, any concession, any negotiation whatsoever is immediately branded as Mr. Chamberlain. Is this something we must just tolerate, ride out, because we've read only one version of the 20th century history? How to deal with this rhetorically, Anatole?
This damnable analogy has been used to oppose, reasonable compromise with, in just about every case, in the world today and that I can remember. It's been used about China. It's been used about the Taliban. It's been used about Russia. It's been used about Iran and Iraq. In every case, we cannot make any agreement. We cannot make any concessions whatsoever, because this is like the Nazis, and if we make one concession, they will try to basically conquer the entire world. Well, in almost every case, this is completely false. The problem about Chamberlain's appeasement was twofold. The first is that if he had bothered to read Mein Kampf, Hitler had set out very, very clearly what he intended to do in terms of, the conquest and enslavement of Eastern Europe. Not actually Britain, it must be said. He didn't care about Britain, but the plan for territorial conquest and racial extermination and subjugation was set out absolutely clearly in Mein Kampf. The Russian government, Putin, has never written any of this kind and has no such plan. Now, that is not to approve of everything that Putin is doing or aims at in Ukraine, but this is about Ukraine. You know, anyone who knows the first thing about Russian and Ukrainian history knows that for Russia, not just for Putin, for the Russian establishment and a great many ordinary Russians, you know, Ukraine is not a stepping stone like Czechoslovakia for Hitler to conquer other places. Ukraine is the issue in itself for Russia. You know, a huge Russian minority there, even bigger Russian-speaking minority, huge economic and strategic interests, deep historical and cultural links. This is about Ukraine. It's not about Russia going through Ukraine to attack Poland. Believe me, you know, something which is not on the agenda of any member of the Russian establishment. As one Russian official said to me, look, you know, we made, I can't remember how many, four, five attempts to conquer and rule Poland, you know, over the centuries. Each one turned out disastrously for us. He said, swallowing Poland would be like swallowing a hedgehog. Nobody wants that in Moscow.
Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for, Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He mentions the Taliban. We'll turn to Afghanistan, another unsolved mystery of 2021. I'm John Batchelor.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.